Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey friends, welcome to the Renaissance English History Podcast. This is the weekly highlight reel of videos that I have put out on YouTube. So in case you don't know, you can go over to YouTube and watch all of my videos. The channel is History and Coffee, and you can just search for my name as well, Heather Tesco, History and Coffee, and you will get it. And you can subscribe there. Thank you to the many people who already subscribe. And then what I've started doing is weekly highlight reels of some of the videos that have gone out on YouTube that would be of interest to the podcast listeners as well. So thanks for listening. And you can also, like I said, go over and join me on YouTube, History and Coffee, and search for Heather. And there I am. So let's get right into it. I'm going to start talking more about the many, many great and great-grandchildren of Henry VII, cousins to Henry VIII and his line, who were often involved in political intrigue like the Grey Sisters, but many of them went about living quiet lives and doing their very best to keep away from drama. And one of them is Ferdinando Stanley. So I first read about Ferdinando Stanley recently in a book about Alice Spencer. I will be doing an entire podcast episode on Alice in the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned for that. But I realized that I had read his name without even knowing it, because he was the famous Lord Strang who funded the Company of Players in the 1580s and 1590s. So anytime you read about Shakespeare, you read about Lord Strang. It looks like it needs to be pronounced Lord Strange, but everything I read tells me to pronounce it Lord Strang, so I'm doing that, and I've heard it pronounced Lord Strang in videos. I've also heard it pronounced Lord Strange. So Strange, Strang, Potato, Potato. They also say Magdalen College when it's spelled Magdalen. Who knows, right? Anyway, Lord Strang, Lord Strange, that's who we're talking about right now. I just hadn't put it together that that was the same person as Ferdinando Stanley. So Ferdinando Stanley was born in 1559. He was the son of Henry Stanley, the 4th Earl of Derby. His family was one of power and influence. They played a significant role in the political landscape of the time. Let's talk about who he comes from. His mother was Lady Margaret Clifford. She was the daughter of the Earl of Cumberland. But more importantly, she held a claim to the English throne, which would, you know, cast a shadow over Ferdinando's life. She was the daughter of Eleanor Brandon, who was, in turn, the daughter of Mary and Charles Brandon. So Mary was the daughter of Henry VII, which means Eleanor was the granddaughter of Henry VII. Her daughter, Lady Margaret, Margaret Clifford, was the great-granddaughter of Henry, and then Ferdinando was the great-great-grandson of Henry VII. Let's take a breath after that. But all of this means that he was in the line of succession, something that would lead to political caution, intrigue, and speculation. Raised in the grandeur of Elizabethan England, educated in the ways of court and politics, Ferdinando Stanley would grow to be a man of influence and mystery, his life a complex tapestry woven through threads of power, patronage, and royal lineage. Something else that made his family unique. Those of you who know Tudor history will know the Stanley family, the husband of Margaret Beaufort, you know, we're talking like 100 years before, who helped turn the tide during the Battle of Bosworth. As a reward for their service and loyalty, Henry VII gave the Isle of Man to the Stanley family. And when he inherited the title of Earl of Derby 100 years later in 1593, Ferdinando Stanley also assumed the title Lord of Man. So the thing that made that title really special, this was no minor gift. It offered the family actually quasi-sovereign rule over the Isle of Man. Unlike many nobles who governed land as part of a larger kingdom, the Stanley family, as Lords of Man, enjoyed a level of independence unusual for the time. They could pass laws. They could even mint their own money. And an act of Parliament even confirmed that the Isle of Man was not officially part of England during this time. It was officially Stanley land. So when Ferdinando became the Lord of Man, he actually kind of became a quasi-king of this territory. In 1579, Ferdinando had married Alice Spencer. She was the daughter of Sir John Spencer, who had a lot of wealth, but not a lot of ancient power. They were part of this kind of new rising middle upper class, this new social mobility that was happening in the 16th century. So he had a lot of money, but he didn't have the title. Ferdinando Stanley had the title, and he was very attracted to the money. Alice was also a good catch. So they had, between the three of them, three daughters, Anne, Frances, and Elizabeth. And each of them would carry on the family legacy in their own way. When I do the full episode on Alice Spencer, we'll talk about them. And I have to say, part of their daughter Anne's story actually needs to come with a trigger warning. And I kind of wish the biography I'd been reading had included it, because I was mentally not prepared for what happened to her. The chapter just started going right into it like it was like no big deal. And I'm like, whoa, I need to take a second and just like process this, right? Let's say she was caught in a very abusive and very twisted marriage. And then it became very public. And I'm still figuring out how I'm going to approach this in the podcast episode because I don't want to gloss over it. But honestly, twisted stories of, you know, sadistic husbands aren't necessarily what you signed up for with this channel. They're not stories I like to tell. And it's also not how I think that Alice or her daughter Anne would want to be remembered. So I'm still kind of figuring out in my head of how I'm going to talk about that story. So beyond his political and social duties, Ferdinando was a patron of the arts. He had a particular interest in theater, and he speculated to even have sponsored William Shakespeare's company among his other acting troupes. This patronage played a significant role, of course, in the cultural landscape of the Elizabethan era, shaped the growth and development of the theater when it was emerging as a popular form of entertainment. His life, as much as he tried to keep it quiet, was not without its share of political intrigue. He was a potential successor to Queen Elizabeth I, which put him in a precarious position in the political landscape of the time. He had to tread quite carefully, steering clear of too much royal attention to avoid potential conflict. Yet the claim to the throne spurred whispers and speculations throughout the realm, placing a target on his back. There were questions about whether or not he was a Catholic. He did everything he could to prove that he was a loyal subject, a loyal Protestant, when he was accidentally implicated in a plot by going to a meeting that he thought was with someone he trusted. He immediately reported what happened, and acted as a witness against the plot and the accused people. And then his life took a very sudden and tragic turn in April of 1594. He died abruptly and unexpectedly, leading to rampant speculation and controversy. He was only 34, and his death raised more questions than it answered. It happened, like I said, very quickly. They couldn't even get a doctor in time. The prevailing theory, even today, is that he was poisoned. A man named Richard Hesketh, who was believed to be involved in the conspiracy to promote Stanley to the throne, he was suspected in this plot, but nothing was definitively proven. It might have been revenge against him for having reported that plot. Despite his untimely death, his impact on the Elizabethan era is undeniable. His death threw the succession into disarray and, you know, helped contribute to the instability of an already uncertain political climate. But also his patronage of the arts and theater and writers left an indelible mark on English culture. His support played a vital role in the rise of theater during this time, possibly aiding the career of playwrights like William Shakespeare.
Today, we are talking about illegitimate children, namely Henry Fitzroy. Henry Fitzroy, born the illegitimate son of Henry VIII and his mistress, Bessie Blunt, Elizabeth Blunt, Henry Fitzroy led a life that was brief, but filled with honors and responsibilities unusual for his age and his illegitimate status, probably because his father never had a legitimate son that lived anyway. He's often overshadowed by his father's six wives and the legitimate heirs to the throne, but his life provides an intriguing window into the dynamics of the Tudor court and the personal whims of Henry VIII. So Henry Fitzroy was born in June 1519, and this, like I said, was the product of Henry VIII's affair with Elizabeth Blunt, who was a lady-in-waiting to Catherine of Aragon. His name, his surname Fitzroy, literally meant son of the king, a clear testament to Henry's public acknowledgement of his illegitimate son. This recognition was quite unique in the English monarchy. Illegitimate children were rarely acknowledged, let alone celebrated, especially if they were boys, because they could pose, you know, a threat to the throne, to the succession. Henry, though, broke norms not only by recognizing Fitzroy, but also bestowing on him significant titles and roles at an incredibly young age. By doing so, he established Fitzroy as a figure of substantial influence in the royal court, despite the controversy surrounding his birth. The existence of Fitzroy, his recognition by the king, and his upbringing all serve as a reflection of Henry VIII's desire for a male heir and his unconventional approach to the rules and the traditions of the time. His rise to power was meteoric, largely due to the favor of his father, of course. At the young age of six, in a move unprecedented in English history, he was granted multiple titles. He was made Earl of Nottingham, Duke of Richmond, and Somerset. Even more astonishingly, he was appointed the Lieutenant of Ireland at just 9 years old. These roles typically would fall to adult nobles of proven experience and capability. But Henry was desperate for a male heir after the failure of his first marriage to produce one. He was willing to disregard tradition and shower his illegitimate son with an array of titles and responsibilities. And also, there's evidence that he was considering making Henry Fitzroy his heir if he wasn't able to have a son. So he wanted to start teaching him about governance and have him establish his own household so that if he did become Henry's heir and Henry didn't have a legitimate son, he would already have that experience. Of course, that would be an interesting what-if scenario. If Henry Fitzroy had been brought up with all of these titles and all of this experience, all of this learning, and then Henry did have a legitimate son, and Henry Fitzroy had lived, and Henry VIII had died, leaving his legitimate son quite young, which he did, how would Henry Fitzroy have fit into that? Would he have just supported his half-brother? I wonder. Somebody should write a novel about that. Maybe I will. Anyway, Henry VIII carefully managed Fitzroy's personal life as well. At the age of 14, Fitzroy was married to Mary Howard, who was the daughter of the Duke of Norfolk. This union further solidified Fitzroy's standing within the English aristocracy and the king's court. Despite being a political arrangement, there are indications that the marriage was actually quite close and affectionate, even though they were quite young. Fitzroy's relationship also with his half-sister, Princess Mary, daughter of Henry VIII and Catherine of Aragon, was also known to be quite warm and friendly. They were only 3 years apart in age, and so they would have, you know, been similar ages and would have seen each other around at court, and they were known to be friendly with each other. These relationships reflect the tight-knit and often convoluted dynamics of the Tudor court, where personal alliances could significantly impact political power and standing. The untimely death of Henry Fitzroy at just 17 years old in July of 1536, shocked the English court. He had been suffering from an ague, a type of severe fever thought to be malaria. Of course, this is in July 1536. Henry VIII had just executed Anne Boleyn in May of 1536. So 2 months later, he loses his son. It must have been quite a traumatic thing for Henry, not excusing his behavior in any way, but just thinking about, you know, he probably really believed that Anne had been plotting against him. And there's evidence at the time that he was worried about Henry Fitzroy and that maybe Anne was plotting against Henry Fitzroy. And then Henry Fitzroy dies just 2 months later. So it must have been quite awful for him. Modern scholars argue that he might have actually been a victim of tuberculosis, and it also could have been the sweating sickness. Of course, this is when Henry is just 2 months into his marriage with Jane Seymour as well. So this heightened sense of tension and political instability makes Henry Fitzroy's untimely death all the more poignant. Henry VIII was deeply affected by his son's death. Not only had he lost his only acknowledged illegitimate child, there's potential for others like the Carey family, but this was his only acknowledged one, but he also still didn't have a male heir, a situation that caused him great anxiety. Fitzroy was the only son he had who had lived past infancy. His death effectively dashed any hopes that Henry might have harbored of Fitzroy eventually succeeding him. And his grief was reportedly profound. Historical records suggest that the king withdrew from public life for a time to mourn his loss privately. He ordered a lavish funeral for Fitzroy, at which the Duke of Norfolk, the young duke's father-in-law, served as the chief mourner. Fitzroy was interred at Thetford Priory, but his tomb was lost when the priory was dissolved a few years later. His death had significant repercussions for the future of the Tudor dynasty. Without Fitzroy, Henry VIII had no living male heir because Edward hadn't been born yet. This created a power vacuum and increased the stakes for the king's remaining marriage. It intensified Henry's desperation for a male successor, a need that, of course, profoundly shaped the trajectory of his reign and the future of his kingdom. Despite his short life, Henry Fitzroy was a significant figure in Tudor England. His rise to power and the titles that he was bestowed and his death reflect the magnitude of Henry VIII's struggle for a male heir. The desperation and the measures taken by the king played a considerable role in shaping the political landscape at the time, and of course resulted in some of the most significant events in Tudor history, including the break with Rome. In the end, Fitzroy's life and death serve as a potent reminder of the fragility of power and the lengths to which a king might go to secure his dynasty. So there we have it, the short life of Henry Fitzroy. Thanks so much for listening to this week's YouTube highlights. Remember, you can go over and subscribe, History and Coffee, Heather Tesco. You will find me there. And we'll be back again next week with more highlights from what went out on YouTube throughout the week. Thanks so much. Have a great week.
Blow, northern wind, a scent for me sweating. Blow, northern wind.